and welcome to the Movie Scumble podcast. On today's show, it's a two-hander rather than our usual three. Our esteemed colleague Thomas is basically as patched as I think. I don't think he, no, he's incredibly busy with his working everything. And if you knew what he actually did, you would be completely sympathetic to what he is having to deal with at the moment in terms of work and his studies and everything. So we can't really slag him too much, but we'll try our best, I suppose. So today it's only myself and the ever delightful Mary. Mary, how are you doing?
I am obviously not as busy and in demand as Simmy. I think the real reason he's not come on this pod today is because we're not talking about, you know, dinosaurs versus sharks part 15. I think that's the real reason he's not here.
Yeah, he has been sending various images of all these dreadful films that are currently airing on Prime Video, and I kind of hate him for it because I actually start watching some of these films when he sends them through, just from sheer curiosity value. And the way that the algorithm works on Prime Video is once you start watching one of these things, you just get bombarded with them. And if you scroll down from the film page that you're actually on, it gives you a list of about 15 other shark, alligator crossover films. So yes, it's a bit crazy. And it's sharks in space and ice sharks. And, oh, I'm telling you.
I thought cocaine shark was the limit, but no.
The ice sharks one is good. The thing is, like, if you look at them all side by side, images for all of them look pretty similar. It's like the same person's done the cover design for all of these. And the shark looks exactly the same. It's on the side on, big wild eyes, and it's like reaching up. So yeah, it's quite funny. But yes. Anyway, I diverge. We are here today to talk about the Glasgow Film Festival 2024, I should say, obviously, rather than just in general. It has just finished in the city. It ran for its usual 10 days. And this is probably the first year since the pandemic that is kind of totally back to normal. Last year was pretty much there, but there wasn't quite as many films, and there was a sense of still catching up, because even though the festival was sort of running at full pelt last year, the number of films that were actually getting made and being available, they were still catching up because of a layoff for pretty much 2 years. Film industry internationally, I'll say, you got to remember that the pandemic hit not just major studios, but all the small independent productions as well, which make up the majority of the stuff that we actually see at the cinema during the festival. So festival itself was pretty full on. As I say, there was 11 world and international premieres, 69 UK premieres and 15 Scottish premieres. And the films came from 44 different countries, with an emphasis on Czech films. It was a whole season of Czech films, but I could be here all day just talking about the various strands of the festival. There are so many. There's some that are there every single year, like the sort of classics one. The classics one this year was all based around films from 1974, because the Glasgow Film Theatre has been in existence as the Glasgow Film Theatre since 1974. The festival itself has been around for 20 years, so it's the 20th anniversary of the festival, the 50th anniversary of the theatre, and I think it was the 85th anniversary of the actual building itself when it used to be called the Cosmo. Yeah. So it's all kind of aligned nicely this year. So it was a pretty big celebration, and it seemed to go down very well. Now, I'd only seen a couple of films from the fest just year, based on the fact that I had all sorts of other nonsense going on, so I didn't actually have the time to go. But my esteemed colleague, the diminutive dynamo, based on the number of interviews and reviews and everything that she actually did for the festival, covered pretty much the whole 10, 12 days or whatever it was of the festival itself. So what were your initial impressions of the opening gala and how it was all set out after that?
So I think that you're right. I think having attended last year, I would say that this year definitely felt fuller, both in terms of the films that were available, but just in terms of the audiences that were there as well. You know, there was very rarely a screening this year where, you know, there was less than a handful of people in. They were all quite packed out. There was a few times where it was like, this is sold out, can everybody please shift up in their seats and all this sort of thing. So opening gala was fabulous. Now, in true Glasgow fashion, it was pissing sideways. So it's just as well the red carpet had a wee sort of canopy over it so that the talent, you know, could be sheltered from that really horrible Glasgow February rain. But the queue was like round the block to actually get in, because Love Lies Bleeding, which is the Rose Glass film, which was the opening gala, was on in all three screens in the Glasgow Film Theatre. So it was, we were in GFT1, it was completely sold out. You know, you went in and you got your Prosecco or your beer or your non-alcoholic drink, which always makes you feel like you are going to something really special. I don't know why. And then you get your little goodie bag on your seat. And it just, even, it's going to sound really silly, but just even like the quality of like the lovely commemorative like 20th anniversary tote bags and stuff that you got this year was just such a nice touch. So yeah, we were right up the back for the opening gala, which was absolutely packed out. And there was a lovely Q&A with Rose Glass afterwards. But it just, it felt like everyone was really anticipating something exciting. So when Alison Gardner, who is the CEO of Glasgow Film, got up to start off the sort of Q&A to begin with, she was like, there's no Alan Hunter this year, but I really hope that I am Knuff. And people were just like buzzing, just absolutely buzzing for that reference. So yeah, I feel like a really good atmosphere from the get-go. People were really excited that it was back, but also back at full swing compared to last. That's not to denigrate last year's festival at all, but this year just felt like a lot more alive, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Like I'd said in the introduction, it was still in transition. There was still kind of catching up, and it had nothing to do with the festival or the people who were organising it, because they do a sterling job every single year, let's face it, sometimes under reasonably serious conditions. Like there was one year I was there and halfway through the festival a snowstorm hit.
I remember that, basically
wiping out the last 4 or 5 days of the festival. Now what they did in that sort of situation was they immediately just said, well, there's no way that people can get to the screenings, we're not going to put the screenings on and force people to actually travel in order to, you know, make good on the tickets they bought. They just refunded everybody. It was pretty early on, and it was very, very quickly they did that, because they knew it was going to be horrendous for like at least 2 or 3 days. So therefore it just made it so much easier for things like that. When the pandemic was just about to hit, the festival was pretty much the last thing that I did
before we all got locked down.
There was a real sense of like sort of all these world events going on, because we're just hearing all the reports coming in from China and then from Italy. And basically all through the festival, they were saying, look, we're going to keep this going, but we're very aware of what's happening. Things can change very rapidly. So they were making the punters aware that they knew what was going on. It wasn't just about the festival. It wasn't just about making money. They actually cared about the people who were turning up, and they wanted the people who were turning up to be safe, to be happy and know that the festival had their own best interests at heart. So it's always comfort. I've always kind of seen that. It's been a festival that's small enough that they can do that for everybody, but then again, big enough that they can attract major talent to it as well. So this year, there was a lot of major talent there.
There certainly was. I mean, I am not saying that the Aragorn poster from Lord of the Rings had anything to do with my sort of sexual preferences, but it also did. So the fact that we had Viggo Mortensen at the film festival this year felt insane, because I feel like for so long Glasgow always felt like the Edinburgh Film Festival's like poor wee cousin. And we maybe didn't quite get the talent on the sort of scale as Edinburgh did. Now, obviously, That's not to say that I wished for the downfall of the Edinburgh Film Festival. It's an absolute loss that that's no longer on the calendar in Scotland. But it's been interesting that this year I've noticed in particular with obviously the Glasgow Film Festival, that the level of sort of star, if you want to call it that, was significantly more interesting, or on a bigger scale than it was before. Obviously, Viggo Mortensen was there to promote the UK and European premiere of his film, The Dead Don't Hurt. And he did the red carpet. He did the whole signing the babies. That's not what I meant. I meant shaking hands and kissing babies. He didn't sign any babies, just to be clear. You know, signing posters, memorabilia, all that sort of thing. He did an intro to his film. He actually sat and watched his whole film, because he was down, like, a couple rows down from me, so I could actually see him, which I thought was super unusual. And then did a Q&A afterwards. And, you know, in his words, he said, "I could sit here all night and talk about what cinema means to me." And I think he was due to jet off after the film, but he actually came back the next day to intro and Q&A the second screening. Which I think is so generous. And actually, what really struck me about him and Solly McLeod, his co-star, when they were talking, is how much they actually cared about cinema. And it was surprising to me that even being a big name like Viggo Mortensen wasn't a guarantee that you would get your film made, which I thought was quite interesting about the sort of power dynamics in Hollywood, because I think he is a big star, but obviously there, you know, this felt like a passion project for him as opposed to a star vehicle. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's increasingly difficult for anybody to get a film made. Just there are players out there who will finance films, but they would want Viggo Mortensen to star in the film rather than
direct. Which he didn't want to do for this particular film. He actually had to step in at, like, basically, you know, 2 days, I think he said, before they started filming. He didn't name who it was, but he said the actor we had in mind, just for whatever reason, could no longer make it. And apparently the rest of the cast were like, "Viggo, you do it. It's not as if you don't act." And he was like, no, this is not for me to act in. I want to direct. I want to concentrate on direction. Because it's like a total love letter to the Western. Like, the attention to detail is incredible. And the fact that he did also step in and act in it, probably why his character is quite sort of taciturn, because maybe I feel like he just had to step in at the last minute and maybe he didn't want as much dialogue or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think to get stars like that involved, I think Graham Norton was at the opening gala as well. Obviously, you've got Rose Glass, you had the entire Arena FC football team joined Glasgow Film Festival for the home game and stuff like that. You know, there were some really, Farah Nabulsi also came along to talk about The Teacher. I listened to Q&A with her as well, very passionate Palestinian filmmaker. And I feel like I've had my head filled in a nice way, but with people who genuinely care about the state of cinema. And I think when, you know, we've obviously spoken on this podcast at length about stuff and content and algorithms, and actually to hear people talking so eloquently about what they love about cinema and how much impact cinema can have and how much faith they have in it as a medium is just really refreshing.
Yeah, because obviously in general terms, there is a real problem with cinema at the moment, in that there doesn't seem to be a middle ground for films. Mm-hmm. You're either talking a lot of money getting spent, upwards of $200 million on a film, or it's less than $1 million and it's a very small production. The space in between, which has been labelled in various ways over the years, was it the women's movie, I think it was, during the 40s and 50s, and like sort of courtroom dramas and all these sort of things, more sort of dramas and sort of thrillers rather than action films, things that have got a sort of contained budget. They are very difficult to get made now, and within studio systems, or maybe the likes of Netflix and Amazon sort of dabble in it, but there's very few people that are actually out there doing that in a big way. George Clooney is one of the only ones that can put his weight against a film and actually get it made without being starring in it, because he obviously did All the Boys in the Boat. And because it was his film, and he's sort of in that sort of middle ground now, but there's very few people that can sort of sustain any sort of career in there. And he's using his clout as a major film star to do that. But I think from the interviews I've heard, From the interviews I've actually heard with him when he was promoting that film, he says, yeah, it's just as difficult for me to get funding than it is for anybody. So it's, yeah, and you are talking about the future of cinema here, let's face it.
Yeah. And I think that's what was so surprising, is especially with the Viggo Mortensen thing, that it was interesting when you look at, like, some, you know, so Farah Nabilsi's the Teacher is about a Palestinian teacher and his sort of experiences of life in the West Bank and how he sort of influenced his students and his own sort of personal trauma and his own personal life. Now, you can understand why a film like that and the likes of Io Capitano, which was playing at the film festival, mm-hmm. very much as a place in sort of conversations that are very real and about what's happening, you know, right now. But then you have a sort of flip side of that where you do have someone like Viggo Mortensen who's talking about, you know, how much he just loves Westerns and how much he wanted to bring a Western to sort of contemporary audiences. And as I was watching The Dead Don't Hurt, which I absolutely loved, I mean, the soundscape alone was reason enough to go and watch it again, but it was very wordy. And it was very, mm-hmm. like, it was very character-driven. And there was all, and there were scenes where you would, again, it's that kind of classic of nothing actually happened in that scene, but you did learn a lot about maybe where this film was going or maybe where a particular character was going. And as much as I enjoyed it, and it's very much classic festival fodder, you do kind mm-hmm. of wonder who would watch this in Cineworld or who would watch this? And that's what I think is quite troubling, I guess, for me, because there was films that I maybe didn't enjoy as much as others during the festival, but there wasn't a single one where I thought, you know, wow, that was terrible. But there was lots of them where I was like, oh, I really love that. I wish more people could see it. But then you just go, well, where would they? Short of the Glasgow Film Theatre itself rerunning some of these films, you kind of go, well, where would they see that? And I guess that's what's the worrying thing.
Yeah. Yes, it's always interesting. I always find, especially at the Glasgow Film Festival, there is a certain leaning towards the whole sort of misery side of things.
Yeah.
And that basically just reflects the filmmakers themselves, where they're coming from, their own mm-hmm. experiences, and a lot of it is, let's just say it, it's miserable as hell sometimes, but it's never anything less than interesting because it's obviously a very well curated festival. They don't just show anything that comes because they must get hundreds of films submitted for inclusion. So yes, it's always interesting, but it's not always enjoyable, I should say, because some films are not made to be enjoyed.
No, but that, do you know what? It's funny because I feel like this year I saw a lot. I did see a lot of misery porn. Let's just get that on the table. I did a lot of misery porn. But a couple of films that I put in my top five were so The Home Game, mm-hmm. which I went to see, which is about this tiny, tiny town in Iceland and about their desperation to play a home game with their football team, which comprises of a bunch of like 40-year-olds who are, you know, breathing out their arse after doing like one lap of the pitch. And it was so uplifting. But what was really funny was there was lots of boys at the screening as well, and they all had their football tops on and stuff like that as well. And I joined in, I had my football top on as well. And what was so uplifting about it was there was people actually like standing and like clapping and cheering, and they showed you mm-hmm. like a wee sort of, I would say like maybe 20-minute section of actual football being played, and people were doing that thing. Do you know how when you go to like a live game and your bum's kind of half out the seat and you're like, oh, or whatever, or like, you know, clutching your hands or whatever because somebody's just missed something. That's what it was like. And it was so immersive and people were like cheering and whooping and hollering and all the rest of it. And it was so uplifting. And the mm-hmm. same with Coup, which is the sort of kind of not so subtle allegory for the COVID lockdown as well. People were really like belly laughing and like really enjoying it and getting into the spirit of the tone of the film. So mm-hmm. I think as well as, you know, all of the very serious stuff, and we're talking about, you know, migrants making their way from Sudan to Italy, or, you know, Palestinian oppression and all the rest of it. It was so nice actually to have a communal sort of like laughing and joyful and uplifting experience, as well as all the coming out of it going, fuck, I need to go and like donate to UNICEF immediately. That was really, that was rough.
Yeah, sometimes when you come out of some of these films, you think, I'm going to go and watch a rom-com.
Yeah.
Yeah, aye. So yeah, there is a certain element. You touched on your favourite five films, and I think this would probably be a good opportunity to actually get into that themselves. Now,
yeah.
what were your highlights from the festival? Now, you saw quite a number of films at the festival, and on the portal for the people who are unaware, there was an industry / press portal where a number of films were available to accredited press members and industry members, so they could actually view the films sort of on their own time out with of the actual showings at the festival. So there was a number of films that you could have actually seen. Now, for yourself, obviously I've read pretty much all of the reviews you did.
Bless you, that makes the review count, reader count one.
Yeah, yeah. No. I think it's been a hell of a lot more than that, based on the reach that we've been getting on X, formerly known as Twitter, based on stuff getting reposted and actual filmmakers getting in touch with yourself as well, just to say, oh, thanks very much for that. It's really nice, which is great, because it's actually, you feel a wee bit more immersed in the whole thing as well, you know.
It's also difficult because a lot of the times, like, for example, the Love Lies Bleeding and obviously the Dead Don't Hurt and the Home Game, you're sitting in the same room, quite often maybe only two or three seats away from the person who's made the film. So you are paying attention, and you do want to give fair, but, you know, obviously reflect on the hard work and effort it takes to get a film made these days, you know, as we just said. So it was a joy that, you know, I got very lucky with the films that I went to see. And I genuinely appreciate, you know, we had people reaching out who were either in like production companies or they directed the film or actors themselves and stuff like that. So it is nice. And I guess in a way it must be nice for them to know that people are actually watching and appreciating the art that they've contributed to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have seen a total of 5 films from the festival. As I said, I wasn't able to watch an awful lot. So my top 5 is the 5 films that I've actually seen. So we'll start with you first. What was your... And it can be in any particular order. It doesn't necessarily need to be...
Well, I do have it from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So, because that's what I'm like. I'm just anally resented that way. So in at number 5, I really enjoyed Coup, which, as I say, was the sort of comedy film about the Spanish flu pandemic back in 1918. That was starring Billy Magnussen and Peter Sarsgaard as this sort of infiltrator chef who comes into this rich man's house and sort of usurps the standing order, as it were, of the servants and the housekeepers and all that sort of thing. It was hysterical, like genuinely so, so funny. And I've only ever seen Billy Magnussen in, is it No Time to Die, where Daniel Craig just refers to him as the guy with the teeth.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see him in a really fleshed out role. So I thought enjoyed that. At number 4 was The Teacher, which is the Farah Nabilsi film. I thought that was very hard hitting, and especially obviously it's so easy to become sort of disengaged with the news and all the images that you see. And I think this brought it back down to a really personal level of understanding that, you know, some people are walking home from school and all of a sudden their house doesn't exist anymore just because of the, you know, particular ethnicity that they belong to. So I thought that was really, really well done. Number 3 was Io Capitano, which was Italy's Oscar entry this year. It obviously did not win. Zone of Interest won the Best International Picture this year. But again, that was fantastic. It really reminded me of that non-fiction book, My Fourth Time We Drowned, because it talks about its 2 16-year-old cousins from Sudan, and they basically cross the Sahara Desert, try to make it to Libya, and then try to make it to Italy as well. And I was quite openly sobbing in GFT1 watching it to the extent, and you're trying to do it quietly as well because it was a very full screening, but it was incredible. It was actually the director who directed Gamora, the film, that did this as well, which is why I think it got to be Italy's entry, despite the fact there's no Italian spoken. And at number 2, my besties from Iceland, The Home Game. It was just pure joy. Like, I've never felt so connected to 11, 14-year-old men that I don't know in my entire life. It was just so joyful and just so amazing, again, how communities sort of pull together and actually still give a fuck about each other and, you know, create a nice world. And in at number 1, with 4 walkouts that I counted whilst I was watching it, was the French horror The Verdelac, which I loved. Like, I am still thinking about this film, the way it was shot, the performances, and no spoilers here because you'll see it in the trailer, the fact that the vampire was a puppet. It was batshit in the best possible way, but I am genuinely still thinking about little lines that were said, or little pieces of costume, or little bits of framing, or how actually quite unsettling and scary it was, despite the fact that you are telling yourself, like, it's a puppet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was so well done. And I think as the production companies were rolling at the start, I'm sure it said Prime Video was one of them. So I really, really hope it does come to Primes or Shudder or whatever it is, so that people can see it, because I thought it was fantastic. So different, so out there, a really fresh take on a very tired genre, and just, yeah, four walkouts. I've never seen that at festival before. So that was intriguing.
You do get it occasionally at festivals that people walk out, because a lot of people, myself included, go in blind to a number of films. It might just be that when I generally attend festivals, I generally have maybe one film in the middle that I'm only going to because it's in the middle and I've got space between two other films I'd quite like to fill, and I don't want to just not do anything for a couple hours, just as the way it works out. So that could be the case, or they just genuinely hated it and they thought it was going to be something else. But, or it could have been, I mean, was it particularly bloody or anything, or quite gory or anything like that?
Yes and no. There was a couple of scenes that I was like, oh, that's a lot of blood, but nothing that would make you go, like, it wasn't like a Saw movie or something like that. It was not anything like that. It's all quite arty. But I absolutely loved it. I just, as I say, I'm still, that and The Home Game in particular, I'm still thinking about, obviously, for two very different reasons. But again, that was one of those things where, do you know that way you came out of the cinema both times and you were just like, ah, I love this festival because it's just so good and I get to see stuff like this that I'm never going to see anywhere else. So, yeah,
excellent. Good choices there. How many films did you actually watch in total, do you think?
Oh, I think it's about 20.
All right.
It's not bad.
That's a pretty decent return, yeah. It's pretty good. Myself, like I said,
I saw
a limited number of films. So the first one, I think I spoke to you about this before, Baby Assassins, Two Babies, which was pish. Yeah, it was. Which is a real shame because I've read reviews of it and people have been very, very positive about it. There was a review on the People's Movies. Friend Paul Devine, who does the People's Movies. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wrote the review of it. It was somebody else on his team, and they were very positive about it. But it was just a really, really annoying film, and it was really poorly acted as well. Now, it's the story behind it is there's two sort of school-age assassins, and the whole first film was about them actually becoming assassins in the first place. But now they're established, and then they mess up, and they get suspended, and they have to work their way back in. But there's other people trying to kill them because they want their place within the Assassin's Guild. The acting from the two leads was awful. It was just, even though I know maybe one or two words in Japanese, I could tell that they were just not very good. But I think a lot of that may have been down to the sort of level of the script itself. It just wasn't particularly good. The action scenes, which had been highlighted in the first film, has been really, really good, were okay, but you could tell that they really had been staged. There was no fluidity to it. It just seemed a bit, obviously it was staged, but when you compare it with other films that use various like martial arts and gun fu and things like that, there's a big scene in it where they're actually fighting there's two of them and there's these two other assassins and they're shooting at each other. And for people who are meant to be top assassins, they kind of miss everybody else so many times.
Dear.
And it's like, I don't know if you ever remember the Naked Gun film where there's a fight scene and Frank Drebin is shooting at somebody and the baddie's shooting back at him, and then the camera pans out and they're right beside each other hiding behind two trash cans and they're going with that and going down. It was kind of like that, and it was just, it wasn't very good at all. Another one was one of the Czech films, Mr. and Mrs. Stodola.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really good. It kind of drew me in very quickly because of the two main characters. Obviously, the background to that is there's two people and they basically don't have very much and they want to get ahead, or the wife wants to get ahead more than the husband. He's just like a big sort of dole, you know, and she says, well, go and rob this woman. And he goes, yeah, all right, yeah, I'll go and do that. And he goes away and makes a mess of it, and obviously murder ensues, and then I think they kind of get a taste for it and all. But I found that to be a really, really good film. It's kind of, it was low-key in certain elements as well, and quite to do with their sort of domestic situation and everything as well. And then as it went on, she got more and more gallus, like sort of bleached her hair blonde, and we go to like the club and do pole dancing and all this sort of stuff. And it was good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a cracking movie.
Yeah, me too.
Another one I saw was a film called Lousy Carter, which is, it was a really short film. It was like 75 or 80 minutes long. It's about a college professor who's told he's got 6 months to live. He's just taken into a doctor's surgery. In fact, at the very start of it, he's in a lift going up with another doctor, and he cracks a joke about, a man gets told he's got 6 months to live, so he asks for his bill to be sort of moved on, so he can pay it later, that kind of thing. And then he's told he's got 6 months to live. So rather than the sort of standard trope of when you've got 6 months to live, you get the bucket list out and you start doing lots of different things. Yeah. He just kind of, I can't be bothered with this. And he just kind of continues on. And he's got an ex-wife, and he's a bit of a sort of a man baby as well. So he's got this ex-wife who kind of just gets on at him all the time. And that she just keeps reminding him, in fact, of why they're divorced now, because basically he was just a child and she couldn't be bothered looking after a child. And it's quite a low-key film. It's quite gentle. Mm-hmm. There's some humour in it as well. He has an affair with his colleague's wife, but his colleague's his best friend, and there's all that sort of interaction as well, and it's very dry and everything, but it's cracking, and it doesn't have like a massive great revelation conclusion. You can kind of work out what's going to happen in it, but it was an ideal way to spend like 75 minutes. It was actually pretty good, not too shoddy at all. I saw Origin, the Ava DuVernay film. Which was really good. I didn't know very much about it. It's based on the life of Isabel Wilkerson. She is an author and a writer. She wrote magazine articles, and she'd just done a book, and she's promoting this book. And then one of her former editors says, "Oh, there's a shooting of a teenage black kid, and it's sort of racially motivated. He's killed in a white neighbourhood, but he's killed by a Mexican who was following him out." And the Mexican guy actually gone to the police and said, "There's this kid here, and he's acting really suspiciously, And the police say, "That's fine, we'll send somebody out and look at it. Don't interact." And the guy goes out and interacts with him and shoots him. Because obviously the young black guy's really scared, and he tries to get away. So it's just really, really... it's powerful. So she takes a look at that, and then sort of tragedy hits in her own life and everything. I won't go into it, I won't spoil it in any way, but that kind of sort of pushes her off track. And then she goes back to it after a couple of years and kind of figures out that it's not actually just racism, it's all got to do with like the caste system. And so she links America, and she links India, and there's another one that she links as well, and it's all got to do with sort of your station in life. It's almost like in the UK, that can be working class, middle class, upper class, that class, that kind of thing. But in India, the caste system is more prevalent, and they talk to, the untouchables, they're called. These are people that are the lowest of the low. These are people that, like, deal with all the public toilets and all this sort of stuff, and they get nothing at all. And it's just she starts coming up with this sort of big thesis about it, and it kind of forms the basis of it, like a new book. And it's just really, really interesting the way that it all happens. It's a documentary, but there's sort of drama bits pulled into it, talking about various elements. They talk about the way that people were dehumanized during the Second World War, the Jewish people. They take the strip, like this whole thing about stripping them and shaving them, taking all the clothes off so they all look the same. They don't have an identity as a person anymore. They're just Jewish. So therefore it's easier to hate an idea, like a group of people than an individual. You don't think of them as individuals. And they link that to obviously racism in the States and obviously in India as well. And it's just really, really, it's actually a really, really good film. And obviously one of your man crushes, John Bernthal, is in it as well. So yeah, so.
Is he?
He is, yes, yes.
Oh, so, he's so handsome.
I know, I know. And the last one, which is probably the best that I saw from the film festival, is The Burning Season, which is Jonas Czernik. He starred and wrote the film as well. And rather than being, the last couple of films I've seen of his have been sort of comedy tinged, this is quite a straight up drama, which is with regards to these two people who have a relationship as children and then again as adults. But it's told back to front. It's told from the end back in chapters.
Right, okay.
There's seven chapters and a prologue, and you start at chapter seven. Well, there's a wee initial bit just at the very start, and you're given no context for it for when they're just teenagers. And then it goes to chapter seven, and they are in a hotel room, and they're having an affair. And then it works its way. And certain things, you're kind of going, well, what's going on here? I don't understand. But things are explained as it goes back and back. And it's really, really well done. It's a cracking movie. And it wasn't comedic in any way. It was very, very dramatic. And it's just, yeah, you're kind of going, I wish I could see more of this type of film, you know. But again, like you said, would this attract an audience to a multiplex? Probably not, which is a real shame because... It was actually a really good film. I really, really enjoyed it. And I wasn't expecting it because I thought it would, just based on his previous stuff, that it would be slightly more comedic. But I was going, smashing. Love this sort of thing, you know. It's really good. And it's kind of ideal film festival fodder because it may not be sort of, it's not miserable. It's dramatic, but it's not overly dramatic, if you see what I mean. You know, you can, there are moments in it that are quite light-hearted and things like that, but and it was just a lovely film, and I was very, very impressed by it. So yeah, it's all good.
That is, do you know what, I think that's what I will say was, I feel like the press portal this year was significantly smaller than it has been in the past few years, and again for me that's a nice sign that there's actually more people going to the cinema. And don't get me wrong, whilst the portal is amazing, it means you can time your films to suit you throughout your day if you've got writing to do or whatever. But actually, in a weird way, I was like, oh, there's not that much on that this year. That's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. The in-person thing is always good. And just, you know, the chance to go to the cinema and go to somewhere like GFT1 to watch a movie is always great fun. Yeah, it really is. So, you would say then it was a good festival then? You enjoyed it?
Oh, I think so. Like I said, I feel like there was a real buzz about the place right from the opening gala. And I feel like audiences were really up for it this year. So, as I say, people were like properly belly laughing, or they were crying, or they were cheating, or they were asking really good questions at the end for the Q&As and stuff like that. And I felt like there was a really good buzz about the place, which I think is so important for a festival of Glasgow's size. Although I was reading that I think it's now the third biggest film festival in the UK.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Which is excellent. But I think it's one of these festivals where, because it's in your home city, maybe don't appreciate it from a sort of outsider's perspective. But I feel like from this year in particular, I was kind of watching other people and how they were sort of interacting with what was around them. And it was just, it felt like really buzzy, like just in a good way. People were, as I say, just really up for it. And yeah, fantastically run. Big shout out to, as I say, Tresca Mallon and the press team, who answered all of my idiotic questions and was really helpful when it came to getting links set up and getting tickets sorted and stuff like that as well. And to all of the volunteers in the lovely red GFF t-shirts who were ripping up your tickets, explaining how the audience award works, handing out the movie tote bags, you know, just really, really putting a shift in. And it's just, it's fantastically done. And when you've got lovely, smiley people on the doors telling you to enjoy your film and all that sort of thing, it just makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, of course it does. It really does. So obviously with it being several anniversaries and things like that for the festival and the cinema itself, it's an ideal opportunity to look back on what your own personal highlights of festivals present and past were. Now, it can be anything at all, but for yourself, what are your sort of memorable moments from the festival?
Do you know, don't get me wrong, this year being like 6 inches away from Viggo Mortensen is a personal highlight that I will take to the grave. Okay, But I think for festivals past, you know what always really sticks in my mind is going to see The Thing in the snow at Brayhead. Mm-hmm. So it was my first time watching that film, and you're sitting in a wee deck chair in Xscape, absolutely freezing your tits off. But it really added to the sort of overall like scariness of the film because you were sitting in snow yourself. And just, I think, in the past, I mean, I've seen some great films over the years, and there's been films that you feel quite smug because they come out later in the year, or they suddenly become a big festival hit, and you're like, well, I actually saw that at Glasgow Film Festival a couple of years ago, you know, and you feel quite smug about it. But I definitely think that this year in particular, the general sort of atmosphere felt like it was back and it was like ready to take on the world. And it does make you feel really proud that that's happening in your city and in the cinemas that you're familiar with. So yeah, I would say that, as I say, Viggo's my highlight for this year, and my wee pals at Rainer FC. But in general, my main thing that always sticks out to me was seeing The Thing in the snow. That was an incredible experience.
Nice. For myself, there's two linked ones. When just before High Rise came out in the cinemas, Ben Wheatley brought it to the Glasgow Film Festival for a showing, and it was in GFT1. It was a packed audience, and there was such a buzz about it when it was on, and it was a smashing film. And then he did a Q&A afterwards as well, and I don't know if you've seen any of his Q&As. He comes across really, really well because he's totally passionate about films, and he's got this sort of encyclopedic knowledge. He really, really gets it, and he understands that he's doing this for the benefit of the people who are wanting to watch the films and all that. And as part of the just at the end of the Q&A, I think he was asked, so what are you doing next? And he says, well, I've actually finished another film. It's called Free Fire. So I'm just working and finishing that off. And then at the festival the next year, he did the same again. He brought Free Fire to the festival just before it was released and did another Q&A. And that was another great sort of, that was a more sort of visceral experience because you've seen Free Fire?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, well, there's a setup. It's people going to buy guns from two sorts of people meeting up in a warehouse in order to buy guns. The first 30 minutes is the setup, and the last hour of it is just a big firefight inside the warehouse, and it's brilliant. Yeah. It's really good. Completely different type of film to High Rise, but again, it was just such a good one. And the fact that he was back 2 years in a row to do all this was just amazing. And just getting him talking again about what he was doing and everything. And the fact that he's always totally unfussy about everything to do with films. Because like there's a John Denver song on Free Fire, and somebody had asked him, you know, did you choose that because, you know, it's like a sort of guilty pleasure. And he said, no, fuck that. I love John Denver. He's brilliant. So and he says, you know, you shouldn't have guilty pleasures. You just, if you like stuff, you like stuff and all that. Yeah. He says, I'm not going to pretend it's just in there to trying to be ironic. It's just because it's a great, great song, you know. And the way this is used is actually really good as well. So because there's a whole thing about John Denver actually in the film. They talk about him and stuff like that. So it's actually really, really well done. But yeah, for me, that would be the sort of the highlights. But there's been loads because of, like, just you're in with an audience of people, especially in a packed screening, where it's different to being with an audience normally in a film, because everybody that's there really, really wants to be there. It's not just they're going out on a Friday night and they're going to see whatever the film that's come out at the cinemas. just because it's something to do. They've actually made a point of looking through the festival calendar and saying, I want to see this film. This is something that I want to see. Now, I've kind of just invalidated that argument by saying sometimes I go to films are just in the middle because...
I do get what you mean, because you are going in blind. I mean, because for a lot of these films, especially when I was trying to write reviews and stuff like that, a lot of these films don't even have trailers.
Yes.
So you are maybe getting like two sentences worth of description and going, okay, I'll go and see that. And then just, you know, hoping for the best.
You're basing it on... What I would do would be base it on kind of recommendations from the Twitter feed from the film festival itself. And like Alison Gardner, for instance, when she comes out and does like an introduction first thing, she'll say, oh, by the way, later on we've got this, and it gives a wee bit about each one just to try and tempt people to go to those as well. And that's just, it's all invaluable stuff, you know, it's all really good. So film festival done and dusted for another year. Won't be back until February 2025, but it will definitely be back because it's doing really well, and it seems to be getting more coverage in terms of press coverage and stuff in the newspapers and the television than ever before. And that's sort of borne out by the fact that it's one of the bigger film festivals in the country now, which is always very good, just because then we can be almost guaranteed that it will be here for a long, long time after this. And it attracts people. The likes of getting somebody like Viggo in will attract other people as well. So, yep.
Absolutely. So and obviously what is particularly lovely is that despite the fact that it's clearly scaling quite significantly, is that sites like ours are still getting opportunity to provide coverage as sort of local sort of reviewers or whatever as well. I think that there's a real focus on getting people in who, yes, obviously they will benefit from coverage in Empire or The Guardian or whatever it is, but actually we know people like on the kind of smaller sites are going to go hell for leather in terms of promoting it and making sure that tweets are tagged and hashtagged appropriately and all the rest of it as well. So I appreciate that there's still this kind of sort of smaller level of support to sites like ours.
Yeah, because especially with sort of bigger sites and the print publications, they have so much content anyway that there is a certain amount of noise, and sort of film festival stuff may get lost. It may just be like a small review and stuff, but like you say, the likes of ourselves, they can actually go into it in a wee bit more depth and promote it. And it is quite kind of like it's open on social media channels. If you can get the word out there, then if you get it to the right people, they'll share it and make sure it gets spread out further, especially the filmmakers themselves. They will promote stuff to their people, so it promotes us, and it also obviously promotes the festival itself, which is always a good thing. So media reach is always nice to have. So there we have it. As I say, festival over for another year, and that's the podcast. We are done. If you want to get in touch with us, we are at the usual social media channels: Facebook, Instagram, X, Twitter, just anywhere that you can see the small purple Movie Scramble logo, that's where we are. Please get in touch with us. If you like the podcast, please provide us with a nice 5-star review on the pod app of your choice. It goes an awful long way to actually helping us promote our content, and basically, we think we're brilliant, so we want as many people as possible to listen to what we have to say. Other people, maybe not so much, but, you know, we want to keep doing what we're doing. And getting good reviews out there is always helpful. So it's always nice. Again, if you want to get in touch with us, you can get us a podcast at moviescramble.co.uk, or, as I say, the pre-mentioned socials as well. So we are out there. We will be back. I have a couple of ideas about what we want to cover in future podcasts, I think, especially since we've both seen Poor Things, we may.
Oh, yes. Do that. We've got a lot to talk about there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Furious yeah. Jumping aside, yes, there's loads of things to talk about. Yeah, yeah. So that may be the next one. It's high up on the list, but we have a number of things that we're hoping to get on with. So, yep, as I say, that's the show. So from myself, thank you very much and good night.
Bye.